This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It's Restaurant Week with a scholarship twist. We're talking about that in a little bit. Plus, as the midterm election recount unfolded in Florida, educators in Broward County came up with a new curriculum to teach the basics of the voting process. We'll talk with the president of the Broward Teachers Union to find out more about the proposed changes there. But first, according to the Florida Coalition Against Human Trafficking, Florida has one of the highest occurrences of human trafficking in the United States. It's usually ranked in the top three among the states. And this issue exists right here in Southwest Florida, and it can happen right in front of people without them even realizing it. For the first part of today's show, we're joined by Nola Theis. She is the executive director and founder of the Human Trafficking Awareness Partnerships. It's an education and outreach nonprofit that focuses on raising awareness of this issue, mostly among students through their outreach programs. Ms. Theis has spoken on this issue throughout Florida, the U.S., and around the world. Nola, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much.
And I'm also joined by Lauren McCraney. She's their program coordinator. Lauren, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So, Nola, for starters, remind our listeners about how the Human Trafficking Awareness Partnership came to be.
Well, in 2004, a group of women on Sanibel belonged to a club called Zonta International. We learned about human trafficking as an international problem, and we came back and said, wonder if it's happening here. And because I had been the mayor of Sanibel, I sort of knew people, and I started asking around, and we started doing research, and I asked the sheriff if he would be interested in working with us, and he said yes. We had a meeting. By 2005, a little guy named Charlie came through in between. And in 2005, 80 people showed up, and we had experts and speakers, and it was very interesting. And we broke people up into little workshops, and one of those people knew of a case of a girl who had been in a situation with four traffickers living in a house, forced to do manual labor and have sex with the men, and left only because she hemorrhaged while she was pregnant and had to be taken to a hospital. So she gave that information, and that led to the arrest of the four traffickers and the rehabilitation of that young girl. That caused a lot of attention in the area, even nationally, and we got – when I say we, I mean the sheriff's office got a big grant to start working on it. And I got involved that way by doing trainings and outreach.
So, you know, you mentioned earlier you had heard about it as something that happened in other places that was more of an international issue.
Right.
And that was back 2004, 2005, you said, right?
Right, right.
So it seems like the issue got the label of human trafficking back then.
Right.
And the idea that it's happening somewhere else has kind of stuck with that.
Right.
Those two words. The words human trafficking, people generally kind of tune out, think it's happening somewhere else to other people that are not right next door.
Right. And that's one of the things we teach to students and to community members and to professionals, that human trafficking really is modern day slavery. That's the correct term. As I described, I had heard of two kinds of trafficking. One was the kind that happened in Immokalee, which is far, far away from us, like 50 whole miles.
It feels otherworldly, though.
Right. That's right. And then the other kind was sex trafficking, and that happened in Europe or Asia or other countries,
those are the common perceptions.
Right, those are. And so now – and the federal government and a lot of people who've been working on it realize that those two things happen in the U.S. They happen to our own children. They happen to middle-class people, rich people, and poor people. But the more vulnerabilities you have, the greater the chance that one of your children or someone you know might become involved in human trafficking. And what we try to do is teach people to recognize the signs, to recognize the vulnerabilities that your children have. They'd have vulnerabilities just because they're of their age. The average age of entry into trafficking is 14.
And that is a tough time.
Right.
Because you cannot really convince a 14-year-old that they're not bulletproof. I mean, kids at this age think that they know everything.
Right.
And not all of them, but, you know, I mean, to generalize here, they it's very hard to let for them to even understand that they themselves are vulnerable.
Right. And these men who are usually 6 to 10 years older than them come onto them as a boyfriend.
The Romeo thing, right?
Who loves them or who's going to take care of them and help them get away from their parents who don't understand them. And I don't know any teenage person who did not go through a period, which hopefully only lasted a couple hours, where they were convinced that their parents didn't understand them and they might as well leave. Most kids don't leave because and if they do leave, running away is like the number one way they can become trafficked because suddenly they don't have food, a place to live, money, or anybody who does love them.
That whole reality thing hits. And then they find some Romeo person who's going to promise to make it that transition so much easier. Right. And then they end up trapped.
Right. And that Romeo transitions to what we call a guerrilla trafficker, where they beat them up, they mistreat them. And the child by that time has lost his or her because another thing is that it happens to boys too, but we sort of...
Yeah, people don't talk about that a lot, but that's becoming increasingly, people are getting more and more aware of that.
Absolutely. And we say, and it's our fault as a society in a sense, because we say to boys when they're doing risky behavior, boys will be boys, as if it's okay and as if it's natural when getting into trouble or being risky is not natural or whatever. They need guidance too. They need to be able to make good judgments.
Yeah, I think in the last couple of years at least, boys will be boys is no longer accepted as any kind of a reason for anything.
We talk about boys will be boys and girls will be blamed. And it's kind of both sides of the coin.
But boys are victimized too.
Right. Boys are victimized.
And we
too.
Need to be really cognizant of that. And I know that Florida ranks third or so nationally. So how much is known about the prevalence of human trafficking cases here in Southwest Florida as opposed to other parts of Florida? Because it feels like a few different countries in one state, really.
Right.
Like they're so far away, the different cities, different rural areas.
The main cities that have trafficking are at every – trafficking can occur anywhere. It can occur on a farm, so it can also occur in a small city. But the main cities are Miami, understandably, when you look at Miami and all
population
the tourism,
concentration,
right, and in Jacksonville, because people often come into the state through Jacksonville, so it's the highways carry trafficking victims all over and pick up trafficking victims. Tampa, which has the highest number of strip clubs of any city in the country.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. And Orlando, which just draws tons of people in. And when you're on vacation, anything you do is okay, which is a myth, but it's something that people behave.
Yeah, that whole
that
what
way.
Happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. We have and all then, the cliches here, don't
right,
we?
Right. That's right. And Lauren and I were just recently at a meeting where the Fort Myers police gave a number. And when you can get a number of how many victims there are right now, first of all, that number probably has changed because it was 2 weeks ago that we went to the meeting. And people have – there's a lot of difficulty in counting because a victim might be under my care or in our program this week and in a shelter next week, and maybe we both count them.
But, or maybe so many people don't report too.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I think that that's the thing too is in the meeting that we were in, there's 19 reported cases currently in October, but only –
Did you say 19?
19. 19 reported cases, 3 verified, 1 is aging out of DCF. So that's just the October numbers, right? And so when you're thinking about those that aren't reporting or aren't aware, what are those numbers?
I just always kind of imagine it's kind of like they say a cockroach scenario. Like there's one, then you know that there are a bunch in your walls that you don't know about. So that's kind of how I view most of those kinds of numbers.
There's a statistic about that too. And most statistics you hear about human trafficking are really unreliable because this is a hidden crime that happens under the surface. But one of the statistics is that 0.5% of the victims of human trafficking are ever identified. So if you do the math, which I somehow find difficult to do that math, but if you do that math, you know the number is
really
large.
Yeah, I'm
really
with you on the
math. Right.
If it's 0.5%. Right. So if 18 is 0.5% of the number, then there's a lot going on that we may not know about.
That's right.
So the reason that we're talking today, Lauren, I'll turn to you about the ArtReach program. Tell me about that.
Right. So we do a lot of trainings. We train professionals, educators. But our main goal is to be able to reach out to the children And we love to do that through our art reach program.
Well, kids love art.
Well,
almost all.
Well, kids love art, but there's that intuitive part of the brain that you're allowed to process the information through the creation of art,
mm-hmm.
right? So when we go in and we educate these kids about human trafficking, they're very rigid, obviously, because even adults are very rigid when it comes to talking about the topic of human trafficking.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you get any pushback from parents. Because they don't want you to talk about that stuff.
There are parents that deny signing the parental waivers so that the children don't.
We are the only group that's actually accepted into the high schools and middle schools in Lee County.
Yeah.
And so they all have to sign a waiver, a permission slip in order for us to come in to reach the kids. But sometimes we still get feedback.
Yeah. So the kids, you have them participate in art projects?
So the main program that we do is a 10-hour program. We would go in, we educate about human trafficking, and then through the remainder of the 9 hours, we process coming back over a couple of days, a couple of weeks, depending on the program needs for the school that we're at, and allow the kids to come up with a theme to create large panels of art. I have one back there, but large art pieces, large canvases, and it's really unique because they light up. They go from very rigid, you know, hoodies over their heads, not wanting to be a part of that dialogue, that discussion.
It's kind of a mortifying conversation to have.
It is, but as a community around their canvas, they begin to discuss it, right?
Yeah.
And then you give them paint, and their body language changes. They become more open to the dialogue, and then at the end, the artwork that they create shows that they've come to understand. They're proud of it, and then it goes back out into the community to educate others about.
And because of the time involved, we do the art reach program primarily after school or in summer camps. And last year we reached about 250 kids because you can imagine 10 hours, 5 sessions, that's a big commitment. But the schools, we've reached about 800 kids, and we do it through their HOPE classes, which in the olden days was called health classes and is now about life skills and learning how to protect yourself is a life skill. And so what we have to do is condense the learning and not have that opportunity for the art part. But we still find we use surveys at the beginning and the end. We still find a significant change both in their attitude and in how knowledgeable they feel about the issue.
So the art really kind of brings it out. Like
right.
It really kind of it puts the focus on creating a piece of art.
It creates a container for them to process it.
Right.
I mean, and that's
– what kind of artwork do you end up getting? What is it? Images of what?
It varies. Some can be very graphic, and then some can be as simple as the one behind me that it represents a giraffe. For example, the one that is behind me, we're at a drug rehab residency. And the boys did not – it was a group of boys, actually, that didn't want to do the art reach program. They were mocking us over, you know, oh, okay, we've got to do this art. But then they created this painting that we carry everywhere that is of a giraffe showing the giraffe being trafficked. And they really were very proud of themselves. Mm-hmm. It's a one-day program. And they were impressed with what they accomplished.
And the interpretation of trafficked was being abused, being caught, being prevented to be able to do what they wanted to do.
Being basically imprisoned.
Being
right.
Hurt.
Even the biggest, even the tallest.
Yeah.
And that's what they said. Even the tallest person can
that's what the giraffe
creature,
is. Even the biggest.
Even the biggest and the tallest, right, yeah.
Can be hurt.
Well, because people can be manipulated, you know, psychologically by these. And that's what happens,
that's,
really.
Yeah. And that's what's so interesting, especially when you can turn these boys that obviously have kind of been through the mill already in life, now they were able to express something and recognize the vulnerability in some thing that you wouldn't normally say that they're vulnerable, just like you might not say that that child who's taking drugs or has a drug problem, which makes them extremely vulnerable,
right. yeah.
but
yeah.
they're not recognizing that.
Yeah. So is this taught mainly to high school kids or middle school age kids? Or
middle and high school. And when we do the outreach program, we started out by saying 12 to 16. Then they said, no, you got to go earlier, the counselors.
Because they're preying upon these kids
yes,
younger.
So we went 10 to 18. Now we are doing basically 8 to 18, but we also work with kids who are in foster care who can stay in foster care after high school. So we've had older youth who are 20.
Do you find that it's helpful, I mean, kind of hitting a wide swath of kids that, you know, the way that you describe the Romeo guy trying to isolate the person, it's kind of like every overly jealous, you know, teenage relationship
right,
kind
right.
of thing. It may come across as just like, oh, but how do you teach kids to help get their friends or extract their friends from those
right.
situations? Because I think peers can have some sort of an influence too. So while one kid may be getting manipulated, their group of friends, mm-hmm. do you give any kind of coping skills for those friends to try to help
right.
get that the other friend out of those claws?
We say mm-hmm. that we're not just educating, we're also empowering. And we tell the kids, for instance, if you ever get asked to cover for somebody sleeping over at your house, don't do it. And tell them why you won't do it. And there are techniques that we expose them to so that they, for instance, might ask their mother permission to do something, but they don't really want the permission. They want the cover that they can't do it. So we have a tips card, we call it, for kids, but we also have one for parents and teachers so that a parent can set up a code word. And if a child is asking you for something that's kind of risky, they don't want to do it, they will put that code word in it. They'll say, can I go to Johnny's house? You know, he lives in that yellow house, and yellow is the word. The attentive parent hears yellow and says, no, I told you have to stay home this weekend. And that allows everybody to save face.
If the person who's being targeted for human mm-hmm. trafficking, if the child is in the presence of the other person mm-hmm. and that person saying, you call your mom and say, hey, I want to go stay at John's house.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you have that secret code thing. So
right.
the parent can then lay the hammer down and say,
right.
no, you're not going. I
right.
get it. I understand what you're saying. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Those are some like real life coping skills. I'm wondering, we said that there were 19 cases in October. Is Southwest Florida, because of its traveling people, we have a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. tourists coming in and out of town. Is this an area where it's really a big issue?
It's here's my theory. If it affects one child, it's a big issue.
Well, yeah.
And so it is an area where we have a lot of people, a lot of kids who get involved. I think we have a lot of kids who are on the verge of getting involved. And that's what I'm always more concerned when people ask me how many victims there are. I want to say, I want to know how many victims won't become victims because of the efforts that our group and other groups have made. And those are the ones I want to focus on. Because if you think about it, if a child is subjected to the terrible things that can happen to them through trafficking, you know, the rapes, the abuse, the everything else, how long does it take to help that child come back to a normal life, and how much does it cost? If on the other hand,
well, this is such a dangerous time too, because that's
right.
when their brains are developing,
right.
and
absolutely,
a lot of risk reward pathways are being, you know, formed during that brain development period
and
of teenage years.
We talk about that in every single class because we want the kids to understand that while, you know, we're telling them the things that they do that get themselves in trouble, like almost like it's their fault. But it's not their fault because we say, you know, if you had a 5-year-old brother and you said to him, go warm up the car for me so I can drive away, you'd say, what, are you crazy? They're not old enough to do that. Well, your brain is not – his brain is not formed sufficiently to drive a car. And your brain may not be ready to deal with these situations that you are encountering because our culture imposes so many expectations on us that we – sometimes just make mistakes.
There are a lot of expectations on teenagers to kind of act like little mini adults.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So I wanted to make sure that we get an invite out now to have you guys come back on the show in January, talk about some of the events that you're going to be doing in January. But for now, I mean, we're out of time for this part of the show. But let's definitely make a plan to get back together in January and talk about this more. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I want to thank my guest, the Nola Theis. She's the executive director for the Human Trafficking Awareness Partnerships. Nola, thank you so much for coming
in.
Welcome. Also, Lauren McCraney, the Partnerships Program Coordinator. Lauren, thank you for coming in as well.
Yeah, thank you.
When we return, it's Restaurant Week throughout Southwest Florida, but it's about more than food. When we come back, we're talking about an education component to this delicious region-wide event. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us. Mm-hmm.